Matthew, welcome to episode 107 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people. With myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD. We're both sports scientists, coaches, athletes, wannabe athletes, past athletes, competitors, researchers, authors, everything really that has to do with the fields of sport that we're interested in. We're trying to be across it. And the podcast is one way that we hope to do that, to bring sports science to you in an easy to understand, enjoyable fashion. So we've been doing it for just over 3 years now, Matt. Can you believe that?
Nope.
And the podcast has been getting a lot of traction lately, probably the most increase in listenership in the last few years. So thanks to everyone out there who's been tuning in for the last 3 years, last 107 episodes. We really appreciate that. And if you can leave us a review, give us some stars, do whatever you need to across your platform, that helps us reach some more people. We really appreciate it. All right. So today on the show, have you ever looked at a pro athlete, whatever sport you're in, and gone, man, their training is dialed. I need to be doing some of that. Well, we're going to talk through how pro athletes train and how your training differs from a professional athlete, what you should and shouldn't take from a professional athlete, from an experiential context as well as a sports science context. So let's get into it.
So, Will, do you train? Are you a pro?
I'm not a pro. Can we first make three differentiations, I reckon?
Yeah. Like,
I think we have, because we have pro, if we call a professional athlete, like, their job is their chosen discipline.
Man, you can't get into this. You're going to offend some people.
But, and then elite.
Carrot, right, keep going. Yeah. Be careful.
But I think just if we use this terminology as we discuss.
Okay. So you're not
as like, a reference.
You're not bagging anybody who calls himself a pro.
Oh, no, really, that's a whole nother discussion.
Okay. I thought that's what you were going to do because, no. You know, finish actually.
Then we have an elite who has to have some kind of job.
Yep.
Right. Or even like elite juniors, who have to study. They don't have to, but it's generally worked into some kind of scholarship arrangement, like it is in New Zealand, that where you can get a large amount of funding if you're studying while you're competing in the junior ranks. And then you have probably competitive age grouper and then weekend warrior, I guess.
Okay.
How do you feel?
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. You know? I think one of the issues that I always see, as an American, I can say this because I used to do this. Everyone who races basically in the elite category says they're pro. Now, they're not, because we generally get a lot more support. So it feels like you're doing quite good. Might get a bit of cash rolling in, get some equipment, but it doesn't pay the bills. So generally, you need a job, right? So you're not a professional. And there is that differentiation where, well, maybe you're trying to live the life of a professional, but you can't. This is where a lot of people get caught up, is trying to train like a professional, but they have all this other stuff going on. That's pretty tricky. And then everyone else basically a professional trains like it's their job, because that's all they have to do today. That is their job, to perform day in and day out.
Yeah, we are in this weird world of like someone's job can be someone's hobby. So it's hard to look at it as their job.
Yeah, it's like in everything, like YouTubing, TikToking, Instagramming.
I don't know if someone's hobby is Instagram, maybe.
You don't think someone's hobby is TikToking? Have you been on TikTok?
Oh, yeah, no, TikTok.
TikTok is bigger than Instagram. You're like a millennial. You know, millennials are on Instagram.
I know. It was like, boomers are on Facebook, bloody commenting on each other's political agendas. And then like Instagram.
Only the ones they agree on or totally disagree with. We won't get into that. But TikTok's huge. But I guess the point is, though, I'm actually not sure what the point is, but you can't be a professional. You're going to have a really hard time being a professional TikToker if you have lots of other things to do. You look at all the other content that someone else on TikTok's putting out. You're not going to be able to keep up with that if you also have a job. It's really hard, really difficult to do. And maybe to bridge that gap, you can try it for a little bit of time. But exercise is a lot different. There's no way you can get the training load that a professional gets and still hold down a full-time job.
Yeah, or I mean, anyone out there doing an Ironman or Iron Distance triathlon, you've heard the term Iron Widow, which is just...
What does that mean?
That means like, so your partner essentially disappears, like, and becomes non-existent. They're training so much because they have a job, right? And then you're doing Ironman, which is, you know, 4K or 3.8 kilometer swim, 180 kilometer bike, and then a marathon. Like,
it's pretty long.
You just have to put in like at least 15 hours on your kind of standard week, right? And then you'd be getting up to 20 or so hours. Trying to fit that in around a 40 hour and a family is crazy. It's crazy, right?
You know, so, we do crazy things though to perform in our sports, don't we? But I think
love it, right? You can absolutely love it, and it can be like this detox. It can be mental stress relief. It can be a lot of things, like positive things. And then, as we've talked about in our overtraining episode, which someone was asking about the other day for his brother, I think it was like, you know, asking us how we got through it, what happened on the other side of that, because it can quickly become an unhealthy obsession too. And I think part of that is we have these differing, like this differing spectrum of what is realistically possible. Like, right, because you see a professional and you're like, wow, that's what's humanly possible, right? So even if I'm not expecting to do that, I can do some degree or percentage of that. But where you sit on the spectrum of how far, you know, you should go, like, oh, well, pros are doing 30 hours. Like, oh, obviously, I can't do 30, but 20, you know, and, or, you know, like if I'm doing 100 miles of running a week, like 160Ks, well, should be able to hit 100, you know. And so we get these arbitrary measures that come in with no individualization, no reference point of actual context or anything. And this is what's drawn this episode.
Yeah, you have some good notes actually along the lines of this, and I think they're pretty applicable. These are the points that we're going to talk about today.
And yeah, so these are the actionable points which you'll get through after we kind of just discuss the like a little bit more differentiation. But it's how do you set a realistic like a measuring stick to just where do you sit on the spectrum, right? Like how fit are you, and what's your capacity? How to build like your skeleton plan, again being realistic and individualized, and how do you choose, like, find your focus and add your quality, not someone else's. So first, if we talk about, I made notes just on a pro athlete, and I've put distance/duration, energy distribution, training plan, and coaches. I think those are the three main things where a pro athlete and elite to an extent differs from probably the majority of our listenership.
Okay. How much do you train? I'm just going to keep asking you, put you under the pump.
Yeah. Yeah. I aim for 10 hours.
That doesn't seem like that much. Is that a lot for runners? Cause it sounds like super low to me.
Well, we can get into this. It's crazy, right? Like you went running this morning, I saw, on Strava.
Yeah.
So you know how demanding running is, right? And yeah, when I wrote our plan, it's like, especially when I came from triathlon, where I was doing like 20 hours, no problem. 15 hours on like an easy week. And I went to start running. And I was like, well, I should, yeah, I'll hit 8 to 10. I barely ever hit 8 hours of running. Like 10 hours is a really big week of running for me. Like that's coming up to 140 to 160 Ks a week, which is like, that's the base level of a professional workload, right? And I run pretty fast. So if you're a slower runner and you're doing 10 hours, you're not going to get the same distance as me.
Well, that's a really important point as well. So don't aim for distance. Well, you could, but maybe don't aim for a professional level distance.
Well, so what the actual underlying training load is 700 TSS, training stress score on training peaks. So, you know, there's relative effort on Strava. Everyone has something. And we've, you know, we discuss this in our Training Peaks courses and our masterclass sports science course that's available on our website. Bundle deal at the moment, actually. So if you buy the full course, the masterclass, you get either the running power or mountain bike power bonus. Just a little side there. So I target a workload, right? And
like a weekly workload.
But anyway, for runners, like I coach heaps of runners, tens of runners at a time. And none of them, I'm just trying to think, only maybe one is doing more than that. And they're all what I'd call competitive age groupers and ultra runners as well. So there might be the odd week, you know, when we do like a massive ultra block, but otherwise, if we kind of talking distance, right, that gets into the energy distribution. It requires so much energy to run, regardless really of how fast you're going. But the faster you go, obviously, it is exponential as to the amount of energy you have to distribute to or exert to run faster compared to riding your bike.
Yeah, that's why when I look at the hours that you do, I'm like, that is like almost nothing. Because I'll do that on my bike easy, and that's just fun riding.
Oh, yeah, you do a 5-hour ride, right? You've done half my max workload.
Yeah.
Like, I think my max workload in the last year, like in terms of running hours, was like 12 hours.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that's pretty crazy when my race is 9 hours. But that's like, that was, maybe I had one other week where I got like 200 Ks in a week. But anyway, yeah. It doesn't.
That is interesting. I mean, so what do you think? Like, remember when I did that five? This was a long time ago, actually. Now we did that episode about writing me a running training plan.
Yeah,
and I did it. I did the plan. I got a lot faster at running. I bought my dope shoes, and I was going to do another 5K, which I didn't do, and I've never worn the shoes. They're actually, I was thinking about this morning.
Dirty. Yeah.
No, I didn't want to, because I mean,
we're coming into
ones.
Spring in the Southern Hemisphere. So we're going to do that for those who are asking me what was Matt's follow-up time.
Yeah, we need to do that actually. But what, one of the things that I noticed is I couldn't really run that much before I got tired. Yeah.
Like that 5K absolutely cooked you. Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised just because I'm just not prepared for it. At all, to be prepared for running. What do you think would happen if I got straight into it and even tried to do half the running load that you do?
You couldn't, honestly.
Like, if 5 hours, which sounds like nothing.
It sounds like nothing, and there's mechanical, like the muscle damage, right? That you just have. Well, not zero experience, but you're running. I mean, I think you did like three day a week, like at max.
Yeah.
But you're running like a 30 minute, maybe a 40, but you got to like 30, 40 minutes and you're like, I can't really go more than that.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, cause you were just like, it starts.
Part of it is that I'm lazy. Partially. But the other part of it is like, I understand what's happening. I fully understand. I'm like, this doesn't feel sustainable. So I'm like, well, there's no point in me trying to do more because I know what's going to happen. I'll just bury myself. And that's the last thing I wanted to happen.
Yeah. And that was off of like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
To 2 hours a week. So you think about trying to, where are you going to find 3 hours? It's like, it's the physiological demand of running. If you're inexperienced, even if you are experienced, like it's just, it's a really high energetic output because you're fighting gravity every single step. Like you, you're essentially have the, like, I can't remember the actual numbers, five times the load of gravity every foot plant, where you have to stop yourself, however large or small you are, from crumbling in a heap onto the ground.
Hey, that's my analogy. That is a good one. Yeah, you're right. That's running though. But
like running is essentially just go jump up and down for an hour. You're doing the same thing.
Yeah. What do you think though about cyclists? Like if someone tried to hit like a pro cyclist training load, what do you think about that?
Well, the thing with cycling is you can do like a significantly lower workload to still move at a relatively fast rate. Like with running, it's for anyone, it's around minutes per K. I don't know what that is in miles, but it must be like 12 miles, 12 minutes per mile. But regardless, that's the transitional speed between walking and running. So you have to, and we can do based off of well, it'd be like a 20 mid 20s to 30% running economy. So you can do the energetic calculation based off of your mass, right? So it just doesn't really matter who you are. You have to be able to achieve a certain workload to be able to run, right? And then no one's going to be sitting right at the transitional speed of run walk, right? They're gonna run. And so then, like, I see even like, not even you, but you're running 5:30s today, which is maybe like a 8 to 9 minute mile. That's pretty quick. Like it's just a little bit slower than what I do my runs.
That was on trails, just for everyone listening. Just pat my own back.
So you're working pretty much the same as me, right? But with, and I have the last decade of running behind me. But it just shows that we pretty much have to, everyone's not, sits within a very fine range of like workload, energetic workload to run. And then as you become leaner and you can become fitter, and you can become more efficient, whether you become, you train that or you are naturally you know, an East African, you might just move faster, but your still energetic output is very similar. Whereas on a bike, you can go really slow, right? Like a pro can ride really efficiently. You know, that they're going to be leaner, their pedaling stroke, or, you know, is going to have a better like economy, but they can ride, and if they're riding on smoother roads, all of the stuff, right? They can ride more 30 kilometer range, was it like 20-25 miles an hour? You can ride like 20 to 25 k's an hour, you know, and you can, which is you're the cycling expert, so what's that in terms of energetic output? Like it's cubed, right?
Yeah, to overcome air resistance. Yeah, so if you go a little bit slower, it's a lot less work.
It's cubed, less work.
Basically,
mechanical work, right? So, which is massive. It's not like that in running, and you can bike, like you're going up a hill. You can go like 8 k's an hour. You can go pretty easy. You can't get up. You can't run up a hill easy. You can't even walk up a hill easy, really. And so for a, you know, middle of the pack cyclist to be able to hit a pro cyclist workload, or I guess distance or duration, totally achievable. Because the subsequent work, like the subsequent recovery, isn't going to be, again, like exponentially greater like it is with you and me running a 50 minute 10K.
Okay. So, all right. What was your next point? I think.
So this gets into part of the energy distribution. So I was listening podcast with, I was telling you about the Norwegian Triathlon Federation sports scientist who's kind of, they always laugh at him, right? Like, oh, you're going to so much detail. Why? Well, they spent $10,000 on lactate strips in a year, right? They were just testing. You know,
they would have gone through everything.
Core sensor, they got research grade stride power meters that were storing data every second rather than reporting every second.
So just higher speed reporting.
Oh no. Yeah. But anyway, it had like multiple core body sensors, temperature sensors. They had the VO2 master portable VO2, like they were just testing absolutely
everything. Anyone in the sports field that laughs at someone for collecting data, they are automatically, I think they're just like, why? This is how,
but anyway, and so he talked about something he's been analyzing over the last Olympic cycle was energetic distribution between athletes and maximal capacity. And so
do you mean TSS or do you mean like,
no, like energy, like kilojoules, calories, whatever. There is a ceiling for people, which is individual, as to how much energy you can exert in a day, which dictates how much training you can do. And like that, there's a ceiling, but it is trainable, right? But there is a ceiling. Okay. And so he looked at how can he put more training into that day, right? Like how can, so here's the Olympic, he coaches and works with the Olympic gold medalist, Ironman world record holder, World Series, Ironman world champion, like this. So how do you go from like an Olympic distance triathlon, which takes just under 2 hours, to a 8 hour event, right? And anyway, obviously there's the specificity stuff, which we'll get into, but he has energetic output. And that's something I've come to realize since being a dad, right? Was like, I always thought it was just time. I just didn't have enough time and I could just fit more in. And then I crashed and burned, right? Last year, like you did your Kickstarter and we were cooked. We just had so much going on with these courses and the teaching and the research, like everything. And we were just putting more time, like that's all it is. Then I came to realize like, it's actually energy. If I can better distribute my energy, I can be way more effective, better training, better parent, better like husband, family man, DIYer,
podcaster, and friend,
runner.
Yeah, but you know, that is true. I fully agree with that. But one of the things is, and this is really important part, is you can measure your energy output when you're training, but you can't measure your energy output when you are doing a Kickstarter or being a dad. You can't.
Yeah. That's not measurable. One of the things I wanted to look up, so there's this report that you can, within a professional chess tournament, the like Grand Masters are expending 10,000 calories a day. And I need to check this, because I haven't fact checked this, but I was like, okay, well that's actually near that limit, right? That's what I do in an ultra marathon, right? That's, so if your mental load is requiring that much energy, but you're, you know, Matt, as people, someone said to you, you're just playing on your computer at home all day. for your job, you think, well, I have to, you know, I can knock off early and get in 4 hours, or I can, you know, bang out this 2 hour workout. Because yeah, that's going to require 2 hours, and it's going to be this TSS, or it's going to be this many calories, kilojoules. And that's not that crazy. Like you're saying, 10 hours of running, Will, like that's not that crazy. I've got to build up to it. I'm only at 9 hours for my last block. And this block, maybe I'll get 10, but I'm doing more marathon stuff, so I'm a bit faster, so I probably won't. But that's like an ultra marathon. So like I'm like 8-9 hours, which is like, you know, how that's, you can fit 8 or 9 hours in your week. Again, this is time. This is like, Matt, you go do a 2 hour intensive run. Like, I can't.
Nor do I want to.
And there's
to,
one. Now you've got to, so you've got to do 8 more hours of running on top of that. And then you have to do another workout. Otherwise, you're just kind of accumulating junk.
Yeah. Well, this is right? What happens, actually. This is,
and when you're running and you're running fast, you can fit a lot in an hour.
Yeah.
Like, this is what happens. Like cycling, it doesn't take you 20 odd minutes to warm up. You can be warm in 10 minutes.
If I would try and do that, what would happen is I'd need a week to recover, and then maybe I could bang it out that next week, right? Just do that same 2 hour run once a week, take those 6 days to recover. But in terms of improving, maybe I would improve, but eventually I'd hit like this ceiling where you're only running once a week.
I'd love to see you try and run 2 hours.
I don't even want to challenge myself anymore. I need to hit that first challenge, and then we'll think about it, the next one.
But if we go to the what we see, right, with a professional athlete, and you go, well, like, I want to be good, I got to hit, like I was saying, I got to hit some reference of these numbers. Like, if I'm not, you know, a cyclist, I'm not hitting 1,000 Ks a week, what am I doing? Like, I'm at 500 and I'm getting tired. And that comes to, like, they get to sleep. And that, where you're expending your energy in the majority part of your day, so like working and being a parent for a lot of people, right? Even just being angry because you're in a commute and the bloody person didn't hit the orange light on the turn signal, and so you got to wait a whole nother cycle. Now you're going to be 5 minutes late. But it's a lot of energy. It's a lot of stress you're exerting just in the commute. Well, a pro athlete, not dealing with that. A lot of pro athletes aren't parents, and they have these dedicated training camps as well, where the goal is to do nothing but train. And so then they get to build training on top of those like training camp foundations and or tours or whatever dedicated parts of training that they're doing. And so their week to week just becomes larger, and it needs to be, because they race a lot. They're going to race way more than you and I, and their races means so much more, and they've got to try and find those 1 or 2% in their training. And their recovery doesn't need to be such that it's like a whole week. Like you're saying, 2 hours of running and then 6 days of recovery. Because they can do an early morning ride or run and then have nothing on until the next, maybe midday or afternoon. And they've got like 36 hours recovery, just like that, right? Which is a huge amount for someone who has nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Whereas for you and I, if we did the same thing, I train in the morning, right? I train this morning, right? And then tomorrow I'm going to train probably around midday. That's, what, like 30 hours? Like, that's not, I'm not going to be recovering. Like, I'm sitting here with you. And then I've got a lot on. Okay. And so, yeah, while it looks the same, what's actually happening under the hood is drastically different between me and a professional. And that's where, when they get to their run, right, if we think about the same workout that I did this morning, I did a group run, pretty easy, 10 kilometers. they're going to be able to do a little more, right? They were just an extra 30 minutes is nothing. 15, you know, maybe before they met the group, the 1 hour group, like they did a little extra and then they'll do a little extra afterwards. No big deal. They just got what they got nothing on when they get home. They're not like me. They don't need to come back and get James ready for date for kindy. Right. And then tomorrow, same kind of thing. Do a longer warm up before the marathon workout, do a bit of a longer cool down, and then maybe have a sleep, get in 30 minutes or hit the gym in the evening. But they're not going to be playing on the tramp, sandpit. I've got to clean the spa. Like, you know,
you do. I was in it the other day and I thought this needs a clean when you weren't home. I jumped in. One of the things actually that I'm thinking about here is actually, I kind of lost my train of thought, but there was two things. And I think someone might be listening thinking, forget you, Will. I can run 10 hours a week, right? And I can make that time and I can make that energy because my job is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's maybe a little bit of a trap because you would need to take a step back and think, actually, then this comes back actually to the three points that we're trying to, that were the three takeaways to this podcast is maybe you can, and maybe it won't be too bad, but actually you need to really, the main thing is you need to assess where you are, right? Before you consider trying to fit in a pro training load, because the point of training is to train your weaknesses. And that's what we'll talk about in a second. And actually, I totally forget the other thing that I was going to say. It was pretty decent though.
I'll just touch on. So we did distance / duration and energy distribution between like your average athlete and your pro or elite even. And then the third one was training plan and coaches. And this is a massive one because you'll see them do a workout, right? Marathon workout. No one's posting up on Instagram about their like easy ride unless they went to a banger coffee shop. They're putting out Strava, they're posting up of their big workouts, right? They might have a reel of them just absolutely, you know, putting it to the sword. And you think, oh man, gotta do some of those, right? Every single pro athlete has a coach and a training plan and a long-term plan. It's their job. Like they have to. It'd be like you turning up to whatever job you have and being like, what am I doing today? I mean, some people may do that, but
it sounds like a lot of jobs maybe. It's not but, a goal helps, but that's, right?
That's where like when Matt, any of the pros that we've worked with, the elites, even like really competitive age groupers, I'm like, where's the end goal? Okay, cool. How are we going to get there? And then so every single workout you see on their Strava or that whatever they're doing isn't this like random smash fest. It's like got targeted intensities that are measured against their personal individualized capabilities, targeted towards the long-term goal, right? And so you may see like, well, I need to do this for my marathon workout because that's what, you know, Eliud Kipchoge did or Christian Blumenfeld, or like, you know, they're like these absolute weapon workouts. As I used to do it, sure, you must have done that. Read in like MTB World or whatever about, you know, the five workouts pros do to get faster. And that, you know, how we spoke to that Radix guy and he was like, I did 2 hours at 80, 90% FTP, like just right on like 90% threshold, you know, he just like sat there for 2 hours. You can't do that. Like you have to be crazy. Well,
he got better and he was professional, but it just turns out that workload was really high.
But you know, you read that and you're like, well, I gotta get it. You know, that's one of the work that, like, this dude who's super fast is telling me how he got fast. So, like, he's sharing the secrets, right? 2 hours at tempo. Get it, you know? And then what happens is, yeah, you it fit into his plan, right?
Mm.
What did he do the day before? Maybe nothing. What did he do the day after? Maybe nothing. He said he did it every week, but he probably did it every 3 weeks, you know? Like, you haven't seen his training plan. You don't know where it fits in. Was that the biggest workout of his entire week? And then you're still going on, like, your bunchy smashing it.
So basically what you're talking about is you kind of, it's just like looking at someone's life on TikTok, which obviously you're not on, but you look at, you think that their life is amazing every day, and it's a highlight reel, isn't it? And it's just like when you see these key training sessions, like, well, that's a highlight reel. Maybe this was the biggest week or the hardest, but that doesn't mean that's what's right for you.
Yeah. And so in the end, I'm always saying we train for optimal performance on race day. And you can have all the data you want, every single piece of it. But if you're going slower, it's not working.
Mm.
And if you're going faster and all your numbers, like your TSS and your CTL and your threshold, they have that, for whatever reason, they're all lower than a week ago or a month ago or last training block, but you're running faster, who cares, right? That's where we're at now. Like, these numbers are a tool in our toolbox to ultimately get you faster.
Yeah.
And if you're getting faster, we just need to reset the numbers. They don't need to be bigger and more every single time.
I totally agree. And that's where training specificity comes in. And like, this is kind of along the lines of what you're saying, but not every week has to be a big week, right? Even if a big week for you or a big week for someone else, not every week has to be that way, because training is about identifying your weakness and working on your weakness, because, well, that is what training is, improving on your weaknesses.
Yeah. So I guess, those are the real big differences. And I think one other add-on, Matt, that I'd give would be looking at pure outputs. So like, Matt, I know Caleb, you told me he was riding at like 300 watts for ages. I can't remember how long. And I was like, fuck, that's hard. You know, I was like, oh, that's hard for me. Right. And so you see these absolute numbers, and I was watching this, this thing on YouTube, and these guys did a build run, and they dropped down to 310 minute per K, at the end of like a 90 minute run for 5K. So like just under 16 minutes for 5K, crazy fast. They took a lactate and it was like 2.1. And there's in the comments, it's like, no one can run that fast at that lower lactate. Like, and I was like, well, these guys can run 28, 29 minute, like 250, 245, 250 minutes per K off the bike. Right. So after around an hour and a half of near threshold work. So their threshold would have to be around 245 minutes per K. So they're going 25 seconds per K slower. They probably can run, you know, that two millimolar like tempo range around 310 minutes per K. Pretty much no one else in the world can, but a professional athlete can. So when you look at it, you also think they must be going hundy.
Nope.
No, they're like, and before that, when you're dropping from like, you know, they're doing the easy part at 4 minutes per K, and they drop to like a 330, 20, you know, 5K at 330, 5K at 320, 5K at 310. You're like, oh, my mind is blown. That is nuts. That is like, they just hit my PB at the end of a long run, you know? And it's just a slight build for them, really. And in relation to most people, or like you, Matt, that would be like you dropping from 6 minute K warm up, and then hitting like a 5:30, 20, 5:10 or something minutes per K, you know. And then if anyone sees that, they're like, and hit that, right? It's the exact same workout with the exact same relative intensities.
Yeah.
That one looks crazy hard. And
the other looks crazy slow.
Yeah. And it's the same with Caleb, like when he's rode for some crazy amount of time at 300 watts. And I was like, there's, no, and It's that's absolute outputs. There's no relative measure there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really important one. For yeah. Sure. You can't look at what someone else is doing and think that you can do it when your threshold is so much different and what your actual performance is so much different.
Yeah, like you can do it relatively, I'm sure. And I think that's a bit of a trap in terms of the energy distribution discussion as well, is that you go, well, I want to, you know, they're doing these at 3:30s and I should be able to do them at 4s or whatever. But in actual fact, it should be a lot slower.
Definitely. All right. So give me some takeaways here.
Yeah, so that comes into the measuring stick.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you use?
Always do.
Your measuring stick.
Hopefully I've got they've got running power. So I do my Willow test, 1K and then a 5K.
Cool.
Right. And then depends if they've got historical data and they've done a race recently, I'll grab the last 20 minutes for heart rate of like an hour to an hour and a half effort, grab a threshold from there.
Okay.
Right. So like generally it's a 10K race or a half marathon. Take the heart rate from assuming, also double checking that they've got a heart rate strap, not just a wrist base, because it could be a bit noisy or wrong. Right. And then running pace, you can just see, yeah, peak pace for 40 minutes to an hour. So again, if it's like a 10K, we can take like 95% of that. If it's around a half marathon under 90 minutes, we can start with 100%, like that is your threshold. Right. And we can kind of just use that as the first starting point.
Well, you have to. And if you don't have this measuring stick, your own measuring stick, you don't know where you're at right now. You need to do that. And we do the same thing for cyclists and mountain bikers. Always a power meter. What's your power for? Well, a broad range of distances or times, usually going for FTP is what we want to get. But then we also check some shorter distances like 6 seconds and 1 minute. So you need it right away. Yeah. You need it. Find out
so
where
the
you
other
are.
One's a 5K. So I work with a lot of people in Southern Hemisphere who have park run, and 5Ks, I just love, they're just for like the average time is around 20 minutes. And it's like this perfect effort level that measures like and incorporates your threshold capabilities as well as like your aerobic capacity. And so now I have a bit large enough collection of data that you can go, yeah, I know where you are, right? We can just bang it out and it's easy. Like everyone can do a 5. You've done them. You go do a park run. It's a bit of fun. Like you can do it. It's generally pretty local and it's achievable distance for everyone. And so on my website, I have a downloadable calculator for heart rate. It's got all the different stuff in it, like Sweet. Whatever kind of peaks you have, or if you do the actual test and some of my training plans, I just have a 30 minute all out, you know, and you just take the last 20 minutes average for heart rate, pace, power, and then you've got your numbers.
Cool.
Yeah. But then, if we're specifically working on something, I want to test that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like if we have a mountainous ultra, got to check how you're going up the climbs, you know, and how that might relate to your flat speed and, or your watts per kg or whatever, right. If you're doing a marathon, we need to check how you're going in zone 3 for 2 hours so you've got to have these measuring sticks that are relative to you. If you're doing want to run a fast 5K, got to check your 1K speed. Don't really give too much about your 1K speed when you're running an ultra, right? It's just a good reference. It's a reference point in terms of the critical power calculation or the Willow test, but we don't really care what it is. It's just a number that helps us better determine your threshold. What matters is like how well can you run 3 hours without your heart rate going out of zone 2 and your pace dropping off. So and it's like, you know, you guys need 6 seconds, 10 second or like 30 second for cyclists, because like runners don't do that kind of stuff. But if the bunch splits or whatever, you gotta
get back on. Yeah
so you got to test that, see if there's a weakness there, and do that. But first and foremost, your measuring stick is like, find your threshold, got to do it, right? Set your training zones. So now you've got like this reproducible discussion, like conversation. What do we call it? The same language is what we call it in our course.
Yeah, right? That's right. Speak the same language when you have the same training zones. Otherwise, not talking the same thing.
So yeah. Well, even like they all represent the same thing. You know, we overlaid it with the physiological marker, like, I guess, energetic system transition points. But yeah, you gotta know that. You have to, otherwise you have no idea if you're improving, if you're working too hard, you're going too easy. And so then, Matt, build your skeleton plan. And so this is where I want people to do it super easy. I have a downloadable template on my website, actually. And it's just put in something super easy. Just open up Excel or Google Sheets Monday to Sunday and just put like easy, hard, easy, you know, rest, busy. That's it. That just do that for like ideally two cycles.
Yeah. So how do you set your cycle? Do you first determine, like, you want to work backwards? Usually that's what we do. Like, you find out when you want this, because to set an actual goal, you need a date for it, right? Yeah, otherwise it's not a goal. It's a dream.
Yeah. It? So you either have your event or you have your next measuring stick point, which is four to 6 weeks for a lot of people. Because life, Matt, you know, like it just gets in the way.
Yeah.
And you have to change it all again. So there's no point planning for like a really long period of time unless you know, like, you know, everything's super stable. You're locked, you know, you're locked into your life. You're like, yeah, next 3 months is pretty much nothing going on besides like one holiday. So yeah, work backwards from that. Right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so, definitely. Once you have the date, then you can start to build that plan. So start with when you want this to happen and kind of basically where you want to be, and then you can work backwards to figure out how to get there.
Yeah. And so that within that you need recovery. So I kind of say like my baseline before I really know someone is going to be 3 weeks on, 1 week off. That typically works well. And then from that you can gather whether they got tired before the, you know, in the third week, or maybe even some people they can go a week longer, but that's in my experience, that's always worked really well as the first point of call.
Yeah.
So you go 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and then you do your test. Typically, I would implement another test at the end of that to see if we've got an improvement or an adjustments that needs to be made in terms of, you know, we're not looking for personal bests. We're just looking for improvement. We want that measuring stick to be the reference point of what's happening in our training. So, yep, thresholds probably will be pretty similar after 1 month. But if we're looking at, you know, I'm looking at a mountainous ultra, how's my hill climbing going? Do this hill TT, check heart rate, check power, check, you know, check pace, whatever, check time to completion. Then we do that. But first off, you don't want to like burden yourself by like having to write these workouts. You just go, yeah, okay, so that's easy. I'm busy. Kids sport. Like, you just put it all in, and now you're ready to like actually write your plan. So that if you've got step one, add your measuring sticks. Okay, so I'm going to do this. I'll do my threshold. Then I'll do my hill climb TT, and then I'll do my, you know, and then in 4 weeks I'll do this, and then. Okay, so I'll write my plan. I'm busy here. Easy day. Hard days, Wednesday, every Wednesday, Sunday. And then you go find your focus and add your quality. And I think this is the biggest thing that people miss when they write their plan, like trying to figure out their long-term plan.
Yeah, what do you mean by add your quality?
So when the Radix guy doing his 2 hour.
His name's Mike.
That's it. Sorry, Mike, because I know you do listen sometimes. It's Mike. I get a message after this.
He already turned it off, man.
I think it's Radix as well. We're saying it wrong. So
oh,
I,
my gosh. Which are good. I had one recently. Those Radix meals. So you find your quality. So Mike was doing those really hard rides.
Find
Maybe
your
that
focus.
Was a quality ride, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's
find
what
your
he
focus
needed.
And add your quality. So that's where it's not just doing something hard, right? Just trying to work on speed or like trying to get stronger, whatever these like ambiguous terms mean. Find your focus. What's my focus, Matt? What is it?
Well, I tell you what, like one of the important things about finding your focus is what are we actually working on this block or this week? Because everything else changes. Everything else changes. If you change what your focus is, every other day looks different. That's a really important thing, part to take away. So let's say maybe you're working on endurance. Well, that means you're not focusing on sprints. Or maybe you're working on threshold. That means you're not doing really, really high volume. Right? So there's different times for different things based on what you are trying to focus on.
Exactly.
At that time.
And so that's find your focus. Okay, Matt. So
if you're asking what my personal one is at the moment.
Yeah. When I'm
no,
not.
I'm not going to. Good.
Active
break
healthy ace. Lifestyle.
Break ace.
So mine's the marathon, which is actually a month away. Okay, so there you go, 4 weeks. Right, so mine's like tempo threshold is my long sustained tempo threshold, like that between lactate threshold 1 and 2, right? That 90 to 100% range. Okay. That's my focus. So I know my focus is not speed, right? It's not really fitness, right? It's marathon focus is my focus. Okay, so sustained sub threshold and muscular conditioning on the road for the, you know, to run 42.2K. Okay, so now I've got to add, so that's my focus. Now I've got to add my quality. Got my focus. Quality. So what does the quality of my training need to be? Okay. And typically for most people, it's going to be 2 times a week. You can have a priority one and a priority two. That's the way I see it. So I got to do a pretty hefty marathon specific workout at some point during the week. Again, most people, it's going to be the weekend. Right. And so where do I need to work on? You know, is it just the duration? Like, I haven't done a marathon before. It's a pretty long way. I don't know if I, you know, how well I'm going to go. So I don't need to be like pushing the upper end of my like zone three, or like, you know, trying to work higher and higher in the 90 percentages of my threshold and push the upper limit of what I can sustain for the marathon. I just need to make sure I can dial in a pace and try and build the duration that I can sustain that. Right. So that's going to be one of my quality workouts.
Cool.
The other one's going to be the threshold based one. Is it a hilly course? We've got to do some hills. Can't just be like, you know, getting the Strava kudos because we banged out a really fast flat run. And both are within, one's top end threshold, one's bottom end, right? So they're targeted, they're quality. Now my quality, my focus, quality align, my measuring sticks align, my training plan's situated, and now I can fill it with
junk miles.
Junk miles. My capability, like my energetic capabilities, right? And what we need to do is look back on that. Again, the measuring sticks can reinterpret the measuring stick as like 600 TSS an hour and a half a week, you know, but there's no point saying, okay, and now I'm gonna do a crate, because that's not the quality. Like if you're in the base phase and you're trying to build mileage and conditioning, then that is right. You want to hit minimum targets. And you can run or ride as easy as you want. You're just building fitness and volume. But now is this not the quality of your training. So you just need to support it with what is going to be sustainable for you. And then you're done.
Done. easy. Then basically the goal takes care of itself. Actually, the goal takes care of itself if you hit these things.
Yeah. And so this is our job, right? Is we offload this mental stress for people to like go, well, what kind of measuring stick, you know, like, because a lot of people are thinking, can you tell me exactly what I need to do for my specific scenario, which changes drastically. Because even if you are an ultra marathon and you've been running like 10 hours a week, but you've done zero speed work for the last like 2 years, you could really improve your running economy by doing some like high intensity interval training. And I don't know what the example would be for mountain biking, or, well, you're doing a whole bunch of gray zone training, right? So you're not doing on the bike, like mountain bikers do that a lot.
Yeah, they're classic gray zoners. Yeah. I see, actually, you have one example workout on this this article, which I'm sure you'll put the link in the description, but it's only one example because it's actually endless, right? So you can try that workout. That looks like a pretty good workout. I might go try that and maybe I can do it. But that
4x5 minutes hill repeats in zone 5.
No, probably not. I don't know, maybe.
On the trails? Give it a go.
I did Hard Hills Tuesday, man. Don't forget. I almost died. But yeah, so you have one example workout on there. Just because there's a million examples that we could give. There's kind of no point in giving you all the examples because it might not be right for you. So if someone wants to know more, or figure out what's best for them, they should get in touch with you.
Totally. Or you.
Yeah. Add us on Instagram or on the website, and we'll help you sort this out.
Yeah. So let's just recap them. Matt, you've got add your measuring stick. So find your threshold and then insert kind of your endpoint, right? Let's just go for 4 weeks. Let's not do anything crazy. Okay. Build your plan. Just write out for the next 4 weeks. Nothing crazy. Again, we're not writing workouts here. We're just going easy, busy, so we can get a lay of the land, right? We can get something we're going to commit to. Then we're going to find our focus and add our quality. So we go, okay, well, I'm doing the Walker 100, you know, 100 kilometer mountain bike race. So I need to be really fit and strong. So like strength and stamina is going to be what I'm going to work on. Great. Okay. Now you've got your days that you put in your skeleton plan, hard, wherever. And you go, all right, I want to do this workout on this day. And then you realize like, oh, well, there's in the next 4 weeks, one's a test week. And so then there's only three of those workouts. And then I just have my midweek ones. There's only going to be three or four of those. Oh, cool. Commit.
Send.
Enjoy your newfound fitness.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for that, Will.
All right, guys. That's at Dr. Will O'Connor and at MTB_PhD on Instagram. Till next time. Catch you later.